it's the Prime of Malka. For this week, I wanted to speak about the Ramban. The Ramban's Yahrzeit is Yud Aleph Nissen. I'm not sure, it's brought in a few places, I'm not sure what the original marker is. But first, like, we always start off, where do I get my information from? And where is the information reliable? Like a lot of Dolim, you know, they stick on stories here and there. We have the following. The contemporary person who wrote by far the best work on the Ramban is Chevel, who put out a biography of the Ramban many years ago. Chevel was a Yid who spent his life putting out the Ramban's Ksavim in a very good Madura, and on Chumash and his other stuff. So, and the things he puts together are extremely reliable, especially since he brings the Makoros. The Ramban also left us a few igros about specific topics we'll speak about, extraordinary conflicts that he was involved in, and that's printed in back actually over there. So basically, that's where the information comes from and where he draws it from. So let's start off by giving a little bit, let's get a sense of the background. Ramban was born in 1194. Let's give ourselves some points of reference. The Rambam was Nifter in 1205, so he overlapped, not significant because he was a kid, but he overlapped with the Rambam somewhat. In 1100s, Rashi was Nifter in early 1100s, and the Bala Tosfos, the major Bala Tosfos, lived in the 1200s, in the 1100s. So basically, he's coming at the end of most of the Bala Tosfos. That's going to be significant. That's in terms of years, and he was Nifter in 1270 approximately. That's his time span. What did the world look like? So first of all, like I mentioned a few times before, in those days countries were less well defined than today, but the Jewish settlements in Europe were, in France, you had the Bala Tosfos, France-Germany, I guess what you'd call it, France-Germany. You had a southern part of France, and it's important to know the distinction, it's called Provence, which included, it had its own Chachamim, Chachmin Lunil, and they were in some ways very, very, they were extremely kosher with the Rambam. That was a second section, segment, they were different. In many ways, Rav Avraham Menahar, Rav Shlomo Menahar, those were all people from Provence. And finally, in Spain, you had a lot of countries, kind of, Catalonia, Aragona, all sorts of different, what today the provinces in Spain, those days were countries and half-countries and so on. Spain, at that time, was being torn apart between, there were the Muslim fanatics, the Almohaden, and remember from the Rambam, they were Muslims like the Hilig Zaydas of today's Daesh, basically. They didn't go for nonsense. When they conquered a place, you had three choices. You either left, converted, or died. That was it. They had no other choices for the people they conquered. So Almohaden had gotten big parts of Spain, and that's where the Rambam had to run away, and so on. The Christians were reconquering, or were conquering Spain back from the Almohaden, and that's why they were kind of positively disposed towards the Jewish subjects. The Jews, they were devastated. All the provinces that had been fighting with Almohaden were destroyed, and they needed money and commerce and help, and therefore the Jews had a decent status in these countries. Meanwhile, in Rome, the 1200s saw in many ways the height of the Catholic Church's powers. There was a pope, a Yemachshmei v'zichu, named Innocent, I guess Lashon Saginor, he made a whole bunch of laws against the Jews. They had to wear like these yellow things. He also his shita was that Rome is the Melech Malchei Melech of all the countries. Any country, every king had to give his crown to Rome, and Rome gave it to him. In other words, you presented, it was Rome gave you your Malchus. He really, really consolidated the Catholic Church's power over its subjects. He was merciless. He started like an Inquisition. There was a place in France where they slaughtered 80,000 people because they had different shitas. The shitas were off, and he began the process. He made a lot of tough laws against the Jews, and he began the process where in England, in 1290, Jews were expelled from England, in 1390 they were expelled for the last time from France, and in 1490 basically from Spain. He started that process. It was the only reason why it was easier in Spain, in the parts where the Ramban was born, was because they were still fighting with Almohadin. They just finished fighting with them. There were no mood to start up with the Jews, and they needed them, they wanted them, and therefore the king of Aragon, James, was a decent king, and he was pretty well disposed towards the Jews. That's what the world looked like, and that's where he was born. So he was born in a city called Gironda, which was in a province of Argona. And the Gironda was known for many other gedolim that were there. He was born, like we said, in 1194. Who were his rebbeim? This is an interesting piece. France had the Balei Tosfos, and their learning was mostly Gemara, Pilpul. You know, it was focused on the Chelek of Torah that was Gemara, Talmud. Provence had the first Mekubalim, and Spain had philosophers. That was basically the Chalukah. Rabbi Ralevi, Shmuel HaNogid, that was Spain. The Ramban's Rebbeim, the one that we know of one or two, because he mentions them when he writes them, and he refers to them as, or he speaks about them as Rebbeim. The one we know most of is somebody called Riba Yocher, who was a French Baal Tosfos. He wrote on every Masechta, they wrote in this and that. We don't have from him, I think he wrote on Yishalmi Pirish. All we have from him is a Pirish on the Siddur, Riba Yocher. Printed in Tfilah Moshe, it's printed in its entirety, and it's a sefer, not a big sefer, but that's what we have. This in a sense was bringing the shita of the Balei Tosfos to Spain, and that's why it's a very important event. From this point onwards, the Derech HaLimud in Spain would be kind of similar. The Ra'ah, the Rashba, the Ramban, the Ritva, they would all be of that same style as Tosfos in many ways. So that was Ramban's Rebbe. Who were the Ramban's Chaverim? There was the Rama, Reb Meir Halevi Abulafia. Reb Meir Halevi Abulafia wrote the Yad Rama, 1, 2. He wrote a Sefer on Chumash. It's called Mesiris Siog Letera, where he has the Mesiris, the technical Mesiris of Torah, you know, the words and so on. It's a very famous, very important work. And he was, the Ramban writes it with great Tarcheretz. A second chaver of the Ramban, who became a Mechutin and was related to him as a second cousin, was Rabbeinu Yoina. Same Rabbeinu Yoina, also Gerunde, Rabbeinu Yoina, who wrote the Shari Tshuva and so on, was his, first cousin once removed, or first cousin, and their children got married, and he was a Mechutin of his. So those were Chaverim of his. Who were his Talmidim? Well, the two most famous ones are the Rashba and the Ra'ah. They were Talmidim of his. Ritva was a Talmid of the Ra'ah and Rashba and so on. That was where he was in terms of learning. How did he make a living? So it's fascinating, because everybody knows the Rambam was a doctor. Well, the Rambam was, I guess, a doctor emeritus until his very late life, when he actually became a doctor. The Rambam wasn't a doctor, a practicing doctor, until the end of his life. The Ramban made his living by being a doctor. It's interesting, people don't know that. How do we know that? Well, the Rashba has two tshuvas. And there's a question there about if you're allowed to be miyalad and akum for money. And he said the Ramban was miyalad akum for schar. And we, you know, the halacha l'maisa, it's a maisa rav. And in one or two places, and a few other places, they make mention of the fact that Ramban was a doctor. And b'meila, his parnasa came from medicine. He obviously didn't practice all that much. I mean, he wrote so much in his lifetime. I mean, forget about learning, but in the writing, he wrote a lot of sfarim. And b'meila, whatever it is that he practiced, but al-kapanim, he was certainly a practicing physician who took money for his services. That we know from Ramban. His first sfarim were what's called Tashlim Halachas. The Rif left out certain halachas he didn't write because the sugis weren't there. And the Ramban, it's imprinted in different mesechtas in different places, different shasim writes, he has Hilchas Chala, he has different halachas, the tefillin, mezuzin, and so on. All sorts of halachas that the Rif didn't really elaborate on, that was written possibly when he was 17 or 18. It was written very young. The Ramban wrote Chidushim on most of Shas. We have that. The Ramban wrote the Milchames to defend the Rif from the Hagos that arrived. The Ramban wrote his Pirush on Chumash. The Ramban wrote he wrote a whole bunch of smaller works. He wrote a Pirush on Iov, a Pirush on Koheles, and then drushes that we have written down, and Shevel put them out in beautiful krachim, two krachim, kisvei haramban, kol kisvei haramban, and he has everything that Ramban wrote, plus other stuff. He wrote a lot of tshuvas we don't have. We have tshuvas, but it's not clear that his, they're the Rashbas, Agapanim, those are the things that he wrote. The Ramban, like we said before, was yoinik from three places. In halacha and learning, he got from the Balei Tosfos. He also was the first person in Spain to have access to Kabbalah. Who was his rebbeim to Kabbalah? In Kabbalah, it says that Eliyahu HaNavi was Megala Seidus to the Ravid, and the Ravid had a son, Reb Yitzchak Sagi Nohar, and he taught Reb Ezra of Israel. We have some of their sfarim, actually, Reb Ezra of Israel. And they taught the Ramban. They was Rebbeim for Kabbalah. It was the early type of Kabbalah. It was the Kabbalah Rishonim. The Ramban, let's try to put a finger on some of the Yichud Ramban in his Sfarim. In his Chidushim, the Ramban is like Tosfos. He asks from Sugya to Sugya, asks Kashis, and says to Rutsim. But if to give a superficial difference, the Ramban is a lot more conceptual. Tosfos is to Rutsim a more matter of fact. This sugya, this way, this sugya, this is shlema that. The Ramban says a lot more svara, and he's sort of the beginning of svaras, really in the Rishonim. And more than that, the Ramban is not an easy sefer because he doesn't quite flesh out. The Rashba Lamashal, his Talmud, explains a lot more what he means. Ramban is a lot harder, Ramban is deeper, but the Ramban is a certain sheirish for the Mahalach of Rishonim after the Balei Tosfos. And that's his yichud in that learning. His writing the Sefer Mulchames is to defend the Rif from the Balei Amora's criticisms and kashas. He writes something in introduction to that which is really fascinating. The Ramban writes, he writes Akdama to many things, very beautifully written, they're very poetic, but the Ramban, when he writes poetically, doesn't sacrifice content, there's no fluff, it's sharp, you can learn it. He writes in the song, in the poem, in front of Mulchames, he says the Balei Amora has very sharp kashas on the Rif, and he says, you have to listen to me, because I have all these kashas against the Rif. So Ramban says something very, very oft-quoted. He says, Torah is not geometry. in geometry, if you prove something, it's proven. That's it. There's no two ways about it. Proofs are absolute. He says in the world of Torah, there's no such thing as absolute proofs. Every proof has a counterproof. Every kasha has a teretz, every teretz has a kasha. He said the derech haTorah is to go back and forth on it and to weigh the different studim and to see what's more mistaver. And that's how the Ramban and that's how the Ramban addresses it. So in his defense of the Rif, he felt he needed to defend the Rif, but he writes clearly, no amount of kashas are going to take you away from the Seichel HaYosher. And it's become, there are shitas like that in other, many later Doris, where a kasha itself never could be the end it all for a Shaka Vataria in Halacha. That's in his Sfarim on Halacha. In a Sefer on Chumash, the Ramban opened up a new world for us. How do you learn Chumash? So Rashi is very Mekatza, and he brings Bederach Klal, he brings the Chazal to help us understand the Pasuk. That's Rashi. The Ben Ezra, the Radak, the Rashbam, they worked with grammar, diktuk. They would say pshatim that were like kind of al derech pshat. If how did this happen? This must have happened, something like that. That's the typical answer. Some of the other Spanish thinkers would try to take philosophy and stick it into the pasuk. The Ramban had a grandson, the Ralbag, who made appearance like that. Basically, taking philosophy as the chachma, and either showing how it's in the Torah, sticking it into the Torah, but they used philosophy as the tool for understanding Torah. The Ramban was the first one to take a certain pnimius of Torah, certain musagim that are innate in Torah, that draw them out and present them, whether it's mice of a similar banim, or all of these type of things, or all of Torah is Nisan Mistar. He gave us musagim, what Reb Chaim did in the Rambam, like just gave us words so that we can articulate certain things. The Ramban gave us concepts and a way to approach Chumash that combined Amkus and Yerushalayim and very, very, you felt it was Torahic. You read some other Spanish ones, it's Aristotle stuck into the Torah. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not true, but you have a sense that you're dressing, you're sort of dressing one thing with another thing, and it's not seamless, it doesn't seem that that's the emes. The Ramban is the sheirish of all of the Havanas of Torah with a certain amkus that is Torahic, and you feel it that way. I saw a fascinating interview. They interviewed Rabban Lichtenstein, so Shiva Gush Etzion, of Soloveitchik's son-in-law. So they're very into Rambam. That's the Messiahs from Brisk and so on. And the interviewer asked him, this is not long ago, a year or two ago, if you had only one sefer that you could take to a desert island, what would you take? So he said the following. He said, the Rambam as a person is the greatest we had, but his firm, he said, the Rambam and Mishneh Torah, somebody else could have written something similar. Nowhere near the Diuk of the Rambam, nowhere near the Hekim, but it's a type of Sefer that does not, it could have been done, it would have been done, not as good, not as well, but it's doable. The Rambam Moreh Nevuchim is hard to imitate, but it's not the Nichsei Tzon Barzel of Kal Yisrael. The Moreh Nevuchim is not the Sefer of Havanas HaTorah. So the Ramban ala Torah is unique. It's our way of thinking, a Yiddish way of thinking, a Torah way of thinking, is the Ramban ala Torah and his musagim and his language and his deference to people, to Gdolim before him, and so on. And it's not something you could come up with. It's something that really, really is unique. And that's the Ramban's Gadlus, that he gave us, it's through his eyes that we're able to see Torah in a certain way. The Ramban in his Torah is remarkable for. He does deal with Dikduk, but that's not the main thrust of it. The Ramban when he tries to prove a point by bringing psukim, they come out of his sleeve. A dozen psukim to prove his point, how a certain word is used. He didn't have a computer. He didn't have a concordancia. He had one of those old chumashim that you can't read today because they're handwritten stuff. And he quotes like this. You know, it's incredible. It's incredible, an incredible amount of at his fingertip bikiyas. The Ramban is remarkable that he integrates soid, he integrates Kabbalah musagim. Sometimes more open, sometimes less open, sometimes he just hints at it, sometimes he brings it without explaining it, but he was the first one to give it to us. The Ramban also has a klal. He brings in philosophical musagim and scientific musagim that he felt you can't deny. This is an emes, and it's a real emes, and let's deal with it, and let's explain it. And whether he talks about the keshet and so on, those are his elements in his sefer on Chumash. Let's talk a little bit about some of the Ramban's turbulent life. Nobody's life was ever easy. The Ramban had three major parshas that I want to talk about. In 1232 or so, there was two different difficult events happened for the Ramban. One was that the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim started spreading in France, in Provence, and so on. And mostly in Provence is where the problem started. And three Rabbanim became incensed at it. They felt that the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim and the Rambam in Yesod HaTorah is wrong, borderline kfira. Two of them, we are familiar to us, Reb Shlomo Minahar and our Rabbeinu Yena, the Ramban's Chaver Mechutin and the Bon Roach Ayachuvah. And they went around getting Rabbanim to sign that they should not, that people should not look at the, they shouldn't learn not Ram Mor Nevuchim, not Ram Yesod HaTorah. The Rabbanim in Provence were big chassidim of the Rambam, and they were incensed, and they tried to put these three Rabbanim into Cheirim. These three Rabbanim were so upset, they went to France, which is further up north, to get the Balatosis to put everybody else into Cheirim. So you had here, and again, for people that say, oh, never was such machlokes, today it's terrible, I read a kalkara, it puts a recherim. This is going now on 800 years. And it was a terrible, terrible, and the Ramban was caught in the middle because he was close to everybody. He was Yoinik from France. Rabbi Yoina was a chaver of his, and a mechutin, Rav Shlomo Minahar. And the Rambam, he held the world of the Rambam. And the Ramban writes long letters. We have those letters, they're printed in Bach Chevelles. His basic point is, one, he holds worlds of the Rambam. Two, he holds worlds of these people, of Rav Shlomo Minahar and Rabbeinu Yoina, and of Tzarfas. And he said, instead of running around trying to get everybody into each other, Chayrim, let's stop the Chayrims. Why don't you come to Bezdin by us? Everybody say the tainis, and we'll work out a solution. And he tears his hair out. He says the Rambam was a Ketoy Shalyan and nobody like him. And writes, I've been at Tzarfas. We all live off the people in Tzarfas. It's their Torah that fed us and so on and so forth. He wrote very, very extremely sharp letters trying to stop the machlokas. It wasn't successful. They ended up burning the Ramban's Mor Nevuchim in France about a few years later. And then they had the burning of Shas, of the Shas in 1240. We speak about the kinna of Shali Sufa Beish and so on. That was one event that really, really, he had a lot of Agnes Nefesh from it. A second event that happened at the same time, I'm not sure if it's directly connected or not. Not clear. There were two families, two very powerful, well-connected, wealthy families in his area. One was called Benbenist, one was called An Constantin, and they were very arrogant. They did a lot of things, a lot of nepotism, a lot of things like Ashura, and the Ramban came out against them. And they were furious with I think they also signed the Chayim against the Rambam, these families, one of the members. The Ramban came out against them, and they spread rumors. They wrote that the Ramban is a mamzer. They said that 130 years before, his mother, a great-great-great-grandmother got married without a get, and so on and so forth. And therefore, the Ramban and his whole family are mamzerim. It's incredible. Nobody today, it's unbelievable, but they wrote. And he wrote very, very sharp letters against them. First of all, he writes, the way you set up the story, you're wrong halachically. And secondly, he says, your people are maratzim because you don't know what a mamzer is. And secondly, he writes that he has a lot of harata that he treated them with kid gloves beforehand. It's an oinish. He should have been a lot stronger and nastier towards them in the beginning because they were terrible people and so on and so forth. The end was they tried to get the king upset at Ramban, and in the king sided with Ramban and banished them and so on and so forth. That was a parasha that a lot, tremendous like a snefesh, and unfortunately, it was not uncommon in the earlier years that when you wanted to get back at somebody, that's where you got back at somebody. Because it was a terrible thing. All it required was you to tell a story. It was very hard to disprove these things. And, and nobody had all the records available. And you ruined them and the whole family and their children and children's children. Everybody said, listen, it might not be true, but if there's a 2% chance that it's true, I wouldn't want to be involved with that. The Maral, which is a few hundred years later, writes his whole Nesiv of Lashon Hara, he writes against people that were Moitzi Laza and another family that were Mamzerim. This was a common way to get back at somebody, and a horrendous way to get back at somebody. That was the second parasha that was very, very difficult for Rambam. One more parasha, which really led to sort of the end, which was the end of his life. And in 1262 or 63, the king forced the Ramban to debate a Pablo Cristiani. I think he was an apostate. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure he was an apostate. And the king it was a huge public gathering. And the Ramban turned to the king and he made two conditions. One is freedom of speech, that he's allowed to say whatever he thinks and he won't be accused of insulting Christianity. And secondly, that the king is not involved. He didn't want to be pogan the king. And the king said okay. Basically, we have it printed. It's called Vikuch Ramban. It's printed, it's a Vikuchim. It's printed in Chevelle. His basic points were, first of all, he said, what do you mean he's Mashiach? He said, Mashiach is supposed to bring peace into the world, and all the Christians have done is bring war into the world. He said, the Christian knights and the crusaders, he says, if you take that away, there's no Christianity. Christianity is all about swords and fighting. So what kind of peace did he bring? Secondly, he said, you said you have writings from the Mishnah, the Talmud, that he's Mashiach. He said, the Tanoim lived after him, many of them lived after him, and they were all not Christians by everybody's count. So they rejected him. How can you say? And then third of all, he said, the Rambam writes that Mashiach is going to build the Beis HaMikdash, and it's that. He did nothing, none of it. So on what basis is Mashiach? And he knocked out all the Peshatim, the Psukim, and so on. Ramban really, really creamed him. At the end of 4 days, the king told him that he won, and he gave him money. He gave him 300 dinar. The Dominicans spread rumors that Ramban had lost, and Ramban wrote it up in a chevers in the countries of the Vikuach, and distributed it, so that people would see what the emes was. The Dominicans then accused him of the deal was only that at the debate they couldn't accuse him of slandering Christianity, but this was after the debate. and the king needed to banish him. And they got, so Lamaisa, the Ramban realized it's not good to stay in Spain too much, and he decided to go to Eretz Yisrael. So in the end of the 1260s, some point, he went to Eretz Yisrael. He came Eretz Yisrael at this time, also it was different pieces were divided in different groups. The Mongolians had invaded Israel, and they had been machiv Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was nothing. There was nothing left in Yerushalayim, literally. He came to Akko. Akko was a thriving city. And already there were actually many Balataises. Rabbi Chilmi Paris had brought with him Balataises from France. And there was a thriving community with a yeshiva there. And he stayed there. He went to visit Yerushalayim. And he was devastated. He said, all of Yerushalayim has about 1,000 families, a few hundred Christian families, and two Jews, brothers, painters, live there, and occasionally Shabbos they'd be able to somehow scratch together minyan. That was it. That was Yerushalayim. And everything was devastated. He said, you can take a house and keep it. It was totally destroyed. The Ramban found a house, he cleared up, he made a shul there. Supposedly it's pretty much the same site where the Chorba shul is today. The bottom shul is called the Bet Knesset Ramban. He tried to do what he could to reestablish a Yiddish yishuv. He felt there's a lot of potential, people would come to the Kaisel, this and that. And he built, we don't know many details, but he did build up something of a yishuv. Reb Reuven Margolis, who was a recent person, lived a very fascinating personality. He claimed that Kupas Reb Meir Bal Hanes is a farce. Nobody knows why it's called Reb Meir Bal Hanes. What does Reb Meir Bal Hanes have to do with Chelekim of Eretz Yisrael? He says the Ramban established a fund for Eretz Yisrael called Kupas HaRamban, and later generations, when they revived it, they forgot where it came from, so they decided to call it Reb Meir Bal Hanes. I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know how to deal with it, but it's a fascinating possibility. The Ramban ended up by going back to Akko. And he wrote letters back home to his son about Eretz Yisrael. And he wrote his famous line that the more Kaddish something is, the more Charev it is. Tremendous Yisurim, seeing what Yerushalayim really was a Churb. That's it. There was nothing there. And he writes very powerfully. He wrote a kina that's a very, very powerful kina on Yerushalayim. And he went back to Akko, and in Akko, he taught a little bit. He seemed to have learned with Talmidim. The last thing that he wrote was, I don't know, wrote, but the last thing he spoke was a famous drasha for Rosh Hashanah, which was also printed. And it's a fascinating drasha. He goes through all of Hilchos Rosh Hashanah. It goes through some of the Inyanim of Tekiyas, and he finishes off about how he left his family and his children. He came to Israel himself. He left at the age of 70. He left Spain, never to see it again, never to see his children again, never to see anything. He writes, I assume he could have tried to stay in Spain. He wanted to go to Israel for once, you know, he wanted to see Israel, be in Israel. And he was nifta 4 years later in Israel. And that was the 1274, so he was nifta there. Al Kapanim, the Ramban's, I guess, is for us, Ramban is a father of the modern pulp of the Rishonim, the beginning of all the Rishonim that we have, not the Balataisis, the Hemshech Balataisis, Ramban, the conceptualization of many halachis, and whether it's the Ramban had a way of giving out the Yesodis, instead of with a Rambam cut the halachas themselves, and it's in the structure that you see the inyan. The Ramban is more user-friendly, explains things. He wrote about many core inyanim that today, that's our default setting for Hashkaf is Ramban. In Teres Adam, he writes about Chias HaMesim and Gehenim and Olam Haba. All the things that he writes are the given. That's like our starting Hashkaf. And his Pirush on Torah is an incredible Pirush. After I reviewed Alevi, was the first one, but he was one of the first Rishonim to really give to really express tremendous gaguim for Eretz Yisrael and for what's there and what's not there. Al Kapanim, that's Ramban, and that's when we learn Ramban, whether we learn it in our Gemara, whether we learn it in Muhammad, whether we learn it in his Ramban al Chumash or in his Drashis, whatever it is, that's the figure of the Ramban that we have. Thank you.